Welcome to Brilliant Ideas Radio. Brilliant Ideas keeps you informed about all the products and people in the food industry. Friends, fun, music, news, and of course, food. Now pull yourselves up to the kitchen table with our hosts, Frank Price and Kerry Ingalls.
Again, Green Ideas Radio. This is me, Frank, and hello, Kerry.
Hello, Frank.
I love our new theme music. I think that sounds cool. It's like upbeat and I don't know, kind of modern. I like that.
I do too. Yeah, I like the whole thing, the whole package that you've got there with the intro. Yeah, I love it.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Here we are again for another 2 hours of fun, food, magic. I think it's magical, isn't it? Magic and food news and commentary and comedy and whatever else we do here. And tonight, see, now I've already screwed up. I'm supposed to say today instead of tonight, but this is recorded anyway, so it doesn't matter. Today, we have two guests. I always screw up. I don't know why I have to say tonight instead of today, even though it's not actually not really tonight. It's only 7 p.m. on the East Coast when we're doing this show. But anyway, today we have...
It's 4 here.
I know, and it's 4. It's today there. I don't know why I have a problem with that. You know, pretending like I'm at a different time zone, but anyway, today we have two guests. As we promised last week, we're going to start bringing on multiple guests each week because you probably get tired of us talking about food news and talking for an hour and a half. So we thought we'd start bringing on more guests. And actually, Kerry, our guest has not called in yet, but our first guest will be Adam Feinberg of Finding's Food. Do we have the phone number, Kerry?
Are we calling him? I'm getting on this right now.
You might want to call him to make sure he realizes that we are on. But Adam Feinberg of Finding's Food will be our first guest. And then our second guest this evening, or just today, will be Marty and Ryan Johnson of Ruby Magdalena Vineyards in
Ruby
Washington
Magdalena
State.
Vineyards, yep.
And I guess, so that's kind of our plan. And then in between, we're going to be doing our standard food news and commentary. So while we try to locate Adam... Hello, Adam, wherever you are. Adam, time to call in.
I just sent him a message.
I do have a story I'm going to talk about since we're waiting for Adam to call in. All right, for the last multiple weeks, can you hear me okay, by the way? I'm having technical difficulties over here.
I can hear you.
Okay, so for the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about Subway and their issue with the tuna and the tuna dilemma and then yada, 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 and there's a lawsuit, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I did a little research, and this whole fish fraud issue is actually rampant throughout the whole seafood industry. I didn't realize how bad it really is, but Subway's tuna scandal is just the tip of the iceberg. It's kind of sad, but bottom line is tuna isn't the only fish that has fraud problems. Actually, a 501c nonprofit group called Oceana, which is an ocean conservation group, began to investigate seafood fraud in 2011. This is really weird, Carrie. Wait till you hear this.
Okay.
And has since uncovered troubling patterns in the seafood industry. In 2016, the group released a report about the worldwide scope of seafood fraud that detailed a pervasive, stomach-churning sheet of unsuspecting consumers. On average, listen to this. This is actually kind of creepy. On average, one out of every five of the more than 25,000 samples of seafood that they tested from 55 countries were mislabeled and were not truly what they said they were. And the trend is continuing through the supply chain, actually getting worse as even into 2020 and 2021. In the United States, this is kind of crazy. You don't know what you're eating. In the United States, studies released since 2014 found the average fraud rate weighted by sample size to be 28%. That means basically, what, almost one-third of the seafood that you buy or eat, whether it be through restaurants or through the supermarket, 28% is not even what it says that it is. Worldwide, Asian catfish, Hake, and escalar were the fish most commonly substituted. More than half of the replacement fish, listen to this, 58% were from species that could get certain consumers sick. In Italy, 82% of the 200 swordfish, grouper, and perch samples tested were revealed to have been mislabeled. And nearly half of the substitute fish have been labeled using threatened fish that were threatened with extinction by the International Union of Conservation. Oceana found that nearly one out of every three fish tested in the United States, this blows me away, in grocery stores and restaurants were mislabeled. Often the mislabeling meant customers were spending more money than the fish was worth or potentially put consumers at risk from fish that could endanger them in one instance or another. So basically, you think you're buying swordfish, you could be buying, who knows, eel for all I know. Oceana found that high mercury fish, for which the FDA warns against consumption by young children and pregnant women, were mislabeled and sold as, quote, safe fish that are low in mercury. Let's see here. So why is this all happening? The answer boils down to a lack of regulation, poor regulatory bodies, and of course the good old profit motive. The big challenge is something called transshipment at sea. Now, I didn't know this was happening, and to me, this is like crazy. By the way, our guest still hasn't called in.
Yeah, I sent a message. I'm looking here, and I don't see that he's. You know what I'm wondering? In case the audience doesn't know that we are, you know, a lot of them don't know that we pre-recorded. I'm wondering if maybe.
They know now, Carrie, because I'm so stupid I can't even keep it straight.
But I had said we are pre-recording Wednesday for Saturday's show. I'm wondering if he thinks it's Saturday, even though I touched base with him today.
Well,
I'm trying to get a hold of him right now.
Adam needs to.
So we'll see. I'm still hoping.
Get with the program, no pun intended. Okay, so the big challenge is something called transshipment at sea, and I never knew this was happening. Your average person would assume, and I would assume this, that a boat goes out, catches fish, and then comes back into port, right? And sells the fish, and then goes back out, catches more fish. But the standard practice is tuna vessels often hand over their catch to another boat while they're at sea, and they just keep fishing. So they lose complete control over their catch. And of course, if you've got some folks that are not the straightforward crowd, they then turn around and start playing games with the tuna or any other fish.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All seafood sold in the U.S. should be safe, legally caught, responsibly sourced, and honestly labeled. Until then, honest fishermen, seafood businesses, consumers, and the oceans will pay the price. Consumers have a right to know more about the seafood they eat. I agree, including what species it is, where it's caught, and how it was caught, so they can make their own decisions, whether that's good for their health, sustainability, or other reasons. Let's see here. Blah, 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 blah. Not to get into the boring stuff. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, so, you know, Subway was having their issue, and they claim that it is tuna. So now I've got to start wondering, is it or is it not?
True tuna. Subway wouldn't even know, right? I mean, because they're buying what they think is tuna.
Exactly. So I mean, is it Subway's fault, or is it the wholesaler's fault, or is it the fisherman's fault, or all the go-between people? The New York Attorney General issued a report in 2018 revealing that a significant percentage of the fish purchased in New York City was mislabeled. Among other things, Letitia James, the Attorney General, found that farmed salmon, this even gets worse, farmed salmon samples were sold as wild salmon. And 27% of the time, and 87% of the lemon sole was also mislabeled, and 67% of red snapper fillets were mislabeled. So, I mean, what do we
Wow.
Doing?
Yeah, I mean, that probably is industry-wide in the food industry. This is a little frightening.
What are we truly eating? And it's like, you know, we talked about, I guess, 2 weeks ago about the aquaculture shrimp and aquaculture salmon and controlling of that. But it seems that once these companies, either who are growing it or fishing it, turn it over to the wholesaler crowd, God knows what happens to it. It says here, without regulation, consumers may spend our lives worrying that the purveyors of succulent fish steaks, flavorful sushi, and moist crab cakes may be all lying to us. So that's exciting. So, I mean, the bottom line is I kind of feel sorry for Subway and every other company, every restaurant that's out there. You think you're buying tuna, or you think you're buying salmon, or you think you're buying whatever, swordfish. You may not be. Somebody may be substituting something. So I didn't realize how bad of an issue it is. It makes me want to catch my own fish and do my own fishing, and so I know where it comes from. But so weird.
Well, don't you do that anyway?
Well, yeah, I do. I fish a lot. If I had to survive on the fish I catch, I would be a starving man. But
good thing you don't have to catch bacon.
Oh my God! Good thing I don't live off the land, because I'd weigh like 120 pounds if I did. I can't grow anything. I tried to plant a garden. Oh God, that's sad. I mean, it's just like everything comes up. I plant the seeds, it all looks good, I plant it, and then it all dies. I have zero green thumb. I don't know what my problem is. And then when it comes to fishing, I cannot survive. And what I thank God there's Amazon and other companies that bring food, because otherwise I would starve. Oh, well. Well, what are we going to do about Adam? Hello, Adam. Are you out there?
I've got my messenger up here. I just keep pinging him, and he's not. I don't know. He's not. In fact, that's my question. Hey, Adam, are you there? So,
you know, well, I'm not going to say that. I actually was going to tell Adam this. Adam and I used to be friends on Facebook, and I don't know what I did. I tick off people sometimes and don't even know what I did. But somewhere along the line, he unfriended me. And I probably said something offensive that would be a surprise. But I don't know if it was political or what, but I noticed today I was looking up on his Facebook page. I'm like, let me see what Adam's doing. Since he's coming on the show, I probably should know a little bit about what he's doing. And I said, well, damn, he unfriended me. When did that happen? And wow, I'm not even on his radar.
Well, maybe we should just have the interview without having him here.
Yeah, well, I can, now I know all about what Adam's doing. I can tell you what Adam's doing. He's actually, well, I was going to tell him this, but since I got to fill up air, because if Adam doesn't show up, then we have no guests. But I literally, years ago, I mean, I've been following Adam for quite some time. I didn't know he was unfollowing me, but he's been trying to develop, like, I think he calls it Finey's Food, and he was developing like rubs for like barbecuing and meat and stuff like that. He's also been working on hot sauces and barbecue sauces. And I actually years ago used to call him, instead of Adam Feinberg, I called him Albert Feinstein, because I thought he was a really unique guy. He had some really neat ideas. And I was going to tell him that today, that he was, I called him Albert Feinstein, not Adam Feinberg, but then I found out he unfriended me, so I don't know, I ticked him off somewhere.
Well, his company is just taking off. I mean, he has he's selling to big box stores, he's retail, he's starting to push out of the Denver area. He's hitting some really nice big retail stores as well, and he's, you know, put together mustard, hot sauces, rubs, marinades, the dust, the sauces, and he just keeps going. It's just amazing how just in the past 6 months, really, he's taken off.
Well, do you know, I mean, I was looking at his website, but the Facebook page, he's got rubs, I guess he's working on some sauces and some hot sauce now, and he's in, like you said, in numerous retail spots. Do you know what his website is? Just, we'll go ahead and have the interview without him. Do you know what his website is?
I do. Yes, I do. It's FineyFoods.com. It's F-E-I-N-Y, FineyFoods, F-O-O-D-S.com.
And have you ever had any of his products?
A long time ago, he sent me some dust, and it's phenomenal. Now, he's getting ready to put a package together to send over some of the, you know, because he has branched out. He's diversified so much as far as his flavors and how he's packaging things right now. So he's getting ready to send over a lot of stuff. I look forward to showing it off to everybody.
Well, I was surprised.
Now,
he's
also a third place world sandwich champion in 2018, and I think he's getting ready to tour again.
He doesn't follow directions about calling in for radio shows, but he's doing well in the food industry.
Well, you never know what's going on.
Well, you know, maybe this is payback. Maybe I did something. He's like, okay, yeah, I'll tell him I'll come on the show, and then I'll leave him hanging.
No, he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't do that. He might do that to you, but he wouldn't do that to me.
Well, that's my point, Carrie. He wouldn't do it to you, but I could possibly see him do it to me. I don't know what I was going to ask him. I was going to say, Adam, what have I done to you? What did I say? Well, what, you know, I know I say a lot, but what did I say that upset you so that you unfriended me and we don't communicate anymore? I didn't realize how far along he had come, but looks like he's got his own rubs. He's got all these different products. So I'm happy. I'm actually very happy for him. And he's got, by the way, folks, he's got like what's called Chesapeake rub and all-purpose Chesapeake dust. I assume that's probably like Old Bay. Do you know anything about his products?
I haven't had any except for the dust from a long time ago. Let me go in and open up his site, and I'll tell you what I had. I think what I've had.
Okay.
And I look forward. I've been watching him these past few months. Just put all of this stuff together, all this amazing stuff together, and my computer's being very slow.
I bet I've known him. For at least 8 or 10 years on Facebook. That's why I kind of lost touch, and I thought, well, I better go check on Adam. haven't seen him in a while. I'm like, oh, no wonder I haven't seen him. But he has been doing quite a bit recently, and looks like he's taking off. He's got his own labels and got his own products. And I think he had, I saw a picture on his Facebook page that had to do with, I think he's in, is it Ace Hardware, which is a crazy place to have barbecue sauces and rubs, but I think it was
Ace
Hardware.
Oh, gosh, no, it isn't. If you go to different hardware stores and different, especially if it's like a larger place, you go over to the barbecue section, and they are loaded up now with sauces and you know, cookbooks for grilling. And if you're going to buy a barbecue and you're going to purchase a barbecue, you're going to purchase all the utensils and everything that goes with it. Now they have sauces and grilling cookbooks and everything. So it's like one-stop shopping. It's absolutely perfect.
Really? I did not know that. They must locally, they must not do that here, but it makes sense. I mean, not to be sexist, but men go to Ace Hardware and it'd be a great place to sell them some rubs and some barbecue, and women too. But I can see where the marketing comes into play with the guys at the hardware store. I'm going to get in trouble. I can't. There's no way I can get out of this, by the way. Men and women go to the hardware store. I realize that, but I will bet the higher percentage are men that go to a hardware store, and it just seems like a smart place to market. Like you say, the grills and the smokers and all the accessories that go with it. And Adam still has not called. Has he responded to you?
No, he hasn't even seen the message yet, which is why I'm wondering. I mean, usually he's on it really quick, which is why I'm wondering if something else is happening. So I have not tried the Chesapeake desk. No, I have not. I think I have tried the citrus desk. Let me open this up a little bit. I've not tried any of the sauces. I really would like to try that Chesapeake Carolina mustard. And let me take a look at what else is here.
Well, I assume because I live in the Chesapeake Bay, I'm assuming that the Chesapeake is probably a spin off of like the Old Bay Seasoning. I'm making that assumption. He's in Denver, right?
He is. He's in Denver. Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about that. That's why I wanted to ask him why he came up with the name Chesapeake. I'm assuming it's because of the Old Bay connection and here in the Chesapeake. Maybe he lived here at one time. I don't know. But those are the things I would have asked him if he was on the show.
You can still ask him. I'm sure you could send him a message. Say, hey.
This is like he's probably getting the best non-interview he's ever had.
You never know. Now, it does say amazing on crab, shrimp, and all seafood. So it is definitely a seafood.
Yeah, I bet it's a spinoff of Old Bay. Because Old Bay is, like, in this area, Old Bay is, like, the spice that people use when it comes to seafood.
Mm-hmm.
I personally don't
like
Old Bay.
So maybe not a spinoff. Maybe something that's just totally his own.
Or different. Right, exactly. I don't really personally like Old Bay that much. I think it's too salty.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's like a religion here. I mean, people put Old Bay on everything. So I just wondered if he was going after that market with the name Chesapeake. I'm assuming so. But,
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I know now over here on the West Coast, you know, we have a ton of seafood over here. I've heard of Old Bay, but I've not. I don't really know what people use as a catch-all seasoning for their seafood here.
It's just odd that he took the name Chesapeake, and there may be no connection, but I bet there is. Well, we will find out some of the time. Maybe he'll listen to the show of this interview, non-interview, and be able to answer our questions and come back sometime and tell us.
Maybe. Now, I had asked him, I said, hey, it's 4:00 on me on the West Coast. And he said, yeah, it's 5:00 for me. And I said, okay. That's why I was wondering if maybe when I said pre-record on Wednesday for Saturday's show, I'm wondering if for some reason he thought it was Saturday.
Well, that I do not know.
I don't know.
Then again,
I'll have to catch him later.
Something else could have happened also. Did you talk to him today?
I did. I did. I said, hello, Adam. Here's the call-in number. It's 4:00 my time on the West Coast. Is it the same for you, or are you an hour later? He said, I'm at 5:00. I said, okay, perfect. He said perfect.
Hold it. And there you go.
So he's excited. But I didn't say today. I didn't say it's 4 o'clock today.
Oh, well. I mean, it is confusing. For those that are listening that don't understand what we do here, we actually record this show several days before it airs. So I can see where people get confused, because years ago, people had the hardest time converting Eastern time, Central time, Mountain time, Pacific time. When I'd say, I need you to call in at, let's say, 7 p.m. Eastern time, people in California could not figure out that that was 4 p.m. And this happened so many times. It was just like, oh, maybe we need to go back to third grade and learn our time zone. Okay, I'm being mean.
Gosh. Anyway, but he just didn't see the message yet, so I'm not quite sure.
Well, maybe, I shouldn't laugh. Maybe something happened. Maybe something.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah.
You never know. Hey, he could have got a giant order from Costco for 4 million canisters of Chesapeake seasoning rubs and screw this radio.
Or got stuck in traffic or, you know, anything could be happening. So what's on your food news list? We've got some time to kill. What's on your food news list?
Well, we're going to do food news here in a second. So what is Adam's website again?
Oh, let me get back over here. It is feinyfoods.com, FEINYFOODS.com.
Okay. Well, everybody, check it out. I don't know a whole lot about his product, and I actually was going to ask him to send me some samples, but I know he's been a hard worker. As a matter of fact, his Facebook page says, Spice Pusher, Hard Worker, Pit Master Chef. And I know he's been hustling for quite many years trying to get his product out there. Yeah, exactly. And it's not easy to introduce a new product to the market. There's a lot that goes into it, and you're fighting the big boys. And he's been out there, like I said, 8 or 10 years I think I've known this guy, and I know he's been talking about his products for quite some time. That's why I was intrigued to find out where it was, but it looks like he's doing well. Looks like he's got some products. You can check out his website, and
he's doing very well. He's just exploding.
If you get some of his products, he has to let us know how it tastes. And on that note, I'm going to take a break. That was the best interview or non-interview that I've ever done. Don't go anywhere. We're going to come back with some more food news, and then our second guest may be calling in. You might want to check with them on the break, Carrie, just to see if they understand.
They will call in. I've been talking to them all day.
All right, everybody, hang tight. We'll be right back.
Explore more about our show, the hosts, and, of course, the ideas at BrilliantIdeasRadio.com.
When I'm cooking up her favorite sauce, she always feels better after she gets a salad toss. Her mama don't like it when I'm messing around in the kitchen, but my baby say I can cook for her anytime. She knows it takes a while to make a real tasty brew. She knows I like to take my time. That's what I need to do. Her mama don't like it when I'm messing around in the kitchen. My baby say I can cook for her anytime. She likes to eat real early. She gets too hungry if it's late, but she always feels better after I spread that sauce on her potatoes. Now, now, her mama don't like it when I'm messing around in the kitchen. My baby said I can cook for her anytime. Her daddy never ever seemed to have a single thing to say. His daughter likes my cooking, so I come on in that kitchen every day. Her mama don't like it when I'm messing around in the kitchen. My baby say I can cook for her anytime. Cooking up her favorite sauce, but she always feels better after getting her salad tossed. Her mama don't like it when I'm messing around in the kitchen. My baby said I can cook for her anytime. Her mama don't like it when I'm messing around in the kitchen. My baby said I can cook for her anytime.
And now, back to Brilliant Ideas Radio with Frank and Carrie.
And we are back. Did you hear anything from Adam?
Karen? I didn't hear anything. No. And he hasn't heard anything from me because he hasn't seen my message yet. So.
Well, I hope he got a multi-million-dollar order from Costco or Sam's Club or somebody or Walmart. Okay, moving along. Guess what time it is, Carrie?
Is it food news time?
It is time for our food news feast. It's the time for Carrie the Beauty and Frank the Beast. I gotta work on that. All right. Well, food news. Let's move along and hope that our next guest shows up. All right. My first food news or next food news story is, my first question is, have you ever had Wagyu beef?
I have not, no.
You know, I haven't either. It's very, very expensive. And I didn't realize how expensive until I did a little further study on what the cost of these cows are from Japan. But Arby's is testing a burger made with Wagyu. I think you say Wagyu. Is that how you say it? Wagyu beef?
I actually don't know, but I think so.
Sounds good to you. According to article in Eat This, Not That, Wagyu beef is already on the menu in 4 test markets located in select Arby's in Orlando, Daytona, Lafayette, Indiana, and Flint, Michigan, and could be coming to even more locations across the U.S. Arby's has yet to release an official statement about the new menu item, but customers in the test markets have already taken to Reddit and to Twitter to share the exciting news. A close-up of the menu shared by Reddit users features a Wagyu blend burger costing $5.99 for a sandwich and $8.49 to make it a meal with a side of small fries and a drink. In the fine print, it says limited time offer at participating locations while supplies last. Considering Wagyu is known for being an expensive as it is delicious, $5.99 for a patty might seem like a steal. It does seem cheap. But as Eat This, Not This explains, Arby's isn't giving customers a special discount. The affordability of the Arby's burger is due to the fact that it's not 100% Wagyu. Well, duh. But rather a blend of 52% American Wagyu and 48% sirloin. A burger with half Wagyu is still better than a burger with none at all. And in the fast food business, a Wagyu burger of any kind is basically unheard of. That's true. I mean, it's usually served in very expensive restaurants, mainly because of the price, but also because the authentic Wagyu from Japan is too tender to be formed into a patty and remain intact while cooking. So that's why they have to mix it with sirloin. But it's interesting that Arby's has decided that they're going to market a special Wagyu burger. For those who may not know, and I did a little further research on it, Wagyu actually refers to a particular breed of cattle, and they all happen to be located in good old Japan. Naturally, a country that has near complete control over resources is going to demand a high price when other countries come knocking on their door, and this is exactly the case with Japan's Wagyu cows. According to Reader's Digest, I didn't know Reader's Digest was still around. Did you?
You didn't. Where have you been?
I don't know. I mean, Reader's Digest was something my great-grandmother or grandmother used to read. I didn't realize they were still around, but I guess they are. According to Reader's Digest, Japanese black, Japanese brown, and Japanese shorthorn make up the three main categories of Wagyu, although there could be hundreds of offshoot varieties. The first Wagyu cattle came to the United States in the 1970s, and today there are only about 5,000 full-blooded Wagyu cattle in the U.S., which is merely a fraction of the 94.8 million cattle in America. So there's only 5,000 out of 94 million. Most of the Wagyu in the United States are the Japanese black variety. And Japan isn't even going to think about exporting their best Wagyu bloodlines. In fact, they've banned the export of Wagyu to the United States altogether, making it even pricier than it was already. If you are to poke around in the U.S. livestock websites, you'll learn that you can buy a young, listen to this, you can buy a young black Angus cow for about $1,250. According to Business Insider, that's a bargain compared to the cost of Wagyu. Guess how much a Wagyu cow cost? Standard black Angus is $1,250.
It's $1,250.
Wagyu, $7,000? You're going to get $30,000.
$30,000, wow.
For one cow. At an auction, Wagyu calves go for around 40 times the price of U.S. cattle, and the prices for some varieties can be downright ridiculous. There's what's called a prize Matsuzuka Wagyu that the slaughter cows are all virgins, which some claim to be the meat is more tender. But regardless of whether or not that's true, the cows have sold, listen to this, one cow, this particular virgin cow in Japan, has sold for $400,000. You got to really love your hamburger and steaks to pay $400,000 for a cow.
Yeah, you do.
So anyway, wow. if you want to test some Wagyu and you happen to be in these four locations at Arby's in Orlando, Daytona, Lafayette, and Flint, Michigan, you can go get yourself a Wagyu blend. And the reason why, they take care, they feed them a special diet. I've heard, I'm not sure if it's true, I've heard that they massage the cows on a daily basis, but the marbling of the meat is such that it's extremely tender. So if you want to try out Arby's testing it, and $5.99 for a burger with Wagyu in it sounds like a bargain. So, of course, based on our first story about fish, how do we really know it's Wagyu, Carrie?
Well, I guess you just have to trust it. You just got to trust Arby's.
Yes, you got to trust it. Okay, moving along to the next story. Do you like Krispy Kreme?
Oh, who doesn't like donuts?
Yeah, I was saying, I hope to God she doesn't say she's never had Krispy Kreme. So,
oh God, those are so. In fact, I just had one last week. I just had a Krispy. My son brought them home. Yeah. Oh.
Well, do you know as a kid, this is kind of cool. In Norfolk, Virginia, I was 4 years old, and I had my first Krispy Kreme donut, the glazed donut, at the very first Krispy Kreme donut shop that it was ever in existence in Norfolk, Virginia. That's where they started.
Are you that old, Frank?
I'm actually that old. I was 4 years old in 1954. I can remember to this day, my grandmother took me there, and I can remember watching all those donuts go up the conveyor belt and go through the cooking mechanism. And they came when they came out the other side, they were like, it would literally melt in your mouth, kind of like cotton candy. You know how cotton candy melts in your mouth?
That's how those donuts,
they came right off the conveyor belt. You eat them, they would melt in your mouth. But, yep, I was at the very first Krispy Kreme on, I think it was called Little Creek Boulevard in Norfolk, Virginia in 1964. Anyway, that has nothing to do with the story. It has nothing to do with the story I'm getting ready to tell, but I'm just trying to use up time. Krispy Kreme has introduced carnival-themed donuts for a limited time. Krispy Kreme is marking summer in a truly perfect way. The beloved donut chain, renowned for its glazed donut, is bringing the fun and flavor summertime carnivals to the donut shop near you. This week, Krispy Kreme handed handed an admission ticket to three new carnival-inspired donuts, caramel apple donut, cotton candy donut, and caramel popcorn donut. They all do sound good, don't they?
They do. They sound fabulous and fall-like. Yeah.
It is fall-like, which is kind of weird that they introduce them in July, but I guess carnivals do go during the summertime.
They do. They kind of start at the end. Yeah,
so I get it. First on the menu, the caramel apple donut. I mean, I was reading these. I'm like, oh, my God. Listen to this. The caramel apple donut takes inspiration from the beloved treat by taking a shell donut and filling it with caramel apple-flavored cream. The donut is then dipped in green apple icing, drizzled with caramel, and finished with rainbow sprinkles and a pretzel stick, allowing customers to eat the treat in true candy apple fashion. I mean, candy apple, you're right. You think of Halloween, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That does sound good. I'm going to have to go to Krispy Kreme. The cotton candy donut brings the flavors of perhaps one of the most iconic carnival treats, starting with an iconic original glazed donut. The treat is dipped in cotton candy flavored icing, covered in cotton candy sugar, and topped with buttercream and rainbow sprinkles. Oh, that's a heart attack waiting to happen.
That sounds fabulous. Yeah.
And then lastly, caramel popcorn donut, which does sound good too. It offers something both sweet and salty with a glazed shell donut filled with caramel popcorn cream topped with a caramel drizzle and caramel popcorn pieces. Oh,
anything caramel, I'm just in. Yeah. Oh, fabulous.
I mean, can you imagine the calories of what I just read? All the stuff?
Everybody that's out enjoying a donut, just enjoying it. Just do not think about the calories. Just savor and embrace the sweetness. Just eat it. Enjoy it.
That's true. When you're eating a donut, you're not thinking of being healthy, probably, right?
Just love it.
I gotta check these out. But they're gonna be only around. They're only gonna be around till Sunday, August the 8th. So if you're going to go to Krispy Kreme, you better go quickly because.
Now, is it everywhere or what are we doing
here? Yeah, it says already available at Krispy Kreme shops in the United States and Canada. The three delightful donut versions of the favorite carnival treats are only available for a limited time. So, yeah, I guess it is at all Krispy Kremes.
So we have 10 days.
Yeah, well, basically now, and when this airs, and when this actually airs on Saturday,
they have one day.
Be 7 days. They have a week left. So go to Krispy Kreme by August 8th.
My math. Oh, how fabulous. I mean,
all three of those. Wow. Okay.
My kids will love me. I'll bring some home this weekend.
Well, you got 1 week to go, so hurry up. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, moving along, let's see here. We go from donuts to, here's my favorite subject, supply shortages. After a year of hybrid or remote learning, schools are facing a new challenge, lunchtime shortages. So now the kids are going back to school, and guess what? There aren't going to be things available for lunchtime. Food distributors and school officials expect shortages on everything from canned fruit to lunch trays. And some districts are struggling to fill positions, employment positions, inside the actual lunchroom. We haven't had a 100% headcount school season in 15 months. It's going to blow the doors open, said Merchants Food Service CEO Andy Mercer to the Wall Street Journal. So all the kids are going back to school, and now there's not going to be any lunches there and nobody working in the cafeterias.
Crazy.
It is crazy. The whole world is crazy right now.
Yeah.
I just want to go sit in a corner and eat a caramel apple donut at Krispy Kreme's and say, screw it.
Well, I think I let you. I think that's exactly what we should all do right now. Go get some Krispy Kreme. Yeah.
Enjoy yourself because there's enough stuff to worry about. Okay. Speaking of school lunches, this is one of those, I always love these studies, Carrie, and these are one of those duh studies that people probably paid a lot of money to find out, but the conclusion is pretty much an obvious answer. But anyway, they did a study, and they found that kids, when they have longer time to sit at lunch, they will eat more fruits and vegetables. Well, duh, if you got more time to eat anything, you're going to eat more of it, right? So they said,
that's right.
You go from,
all you need is more time.
10 minutes to 20 minutes, of course, you're going to eat more. It says in this study, I read these things and I always just laugh. I'm just like, oh boy, can you imagine the money was spent on this? But they said, when kids sit down to eat lunch at school, fruits and vegetables may not be the first choice. Well, that's a no duh, too. But with more time at lunch, at the lunch table, they are more likely to pick up those healthy foods. If we want to improve children's nutrition and health, ensuring longer school lunch breaks can help achieve those goals. According to research from the University of Illinois, Prescott and study co-authors Zana Berg and Jessica Metcalf and Rena Ellison compared fruit and vegetable consumptions during a 10-minute versus a 20-minute lunchtime seating, and the results were clear. During shorter lunch periods, children ate significantly less of the fruit and vegetable parts of their meals. Well, of course, they're going to dig into the hamburger or the fries first, right?
Right, right.
While there was no significant differences in the amount of beverages or entrees they consumed, it makes sense that you might eat the part of the meal you look forward to first, duh, and if there's enough time left, you might go towards the other parts. But if there's not enough time, those items tend to suffer, and they tend to be fruits and vegetables. So if you give them more time, they're going to eat more fruits and vegetables. I say give them 2 hours. Let them sit there for 2 hours and eat all they want. That's what I say. Okay. I'd love to know how much they paid for that. Anything from Adam, by the way?
He hasn't even seen the message yet, so I don't know what's going on. Something must be going on, or maybe he actually has the wrong day. I don't know, but I mean, I just hope that everything's all right.
So he's in Denver, so he's in Mountain Time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. Well, moving along, this next story ticks me off, but a lot of things tick me off. Sales of vegan bacon are on the rise as more brands are hitting the market. But this is the funny part. There's no denying the appeal of bacon. You bet. Bacon is like the king of all foods, in my opinion. The pork product represents a heart-stopping 99% of the total bacon market. So pork is still 99% of the total bacon market, so I really shouldn't get upset. We're talking 1% here. In 2020, sales of breakfast staple totaled $6 billion in bacon through November, which was up 20% from the time period a year earlier. But plant-based bacon is carving out space in the frying pan. Sales are up 25%. Almost double that of meat-based bacon for the 52-week period ending April 18th, according to data, which reports retailer data from natural and organic products. Nielsen, which aggregates data from conventional grocers, reported that the entire category of bacon alternatives almost doubled in 2020 to 267 million. Well, think about that. So this plant-based garbage is only $267 million out of a $6 billion market. So
yeah, but I look at it this way. Like my mom couldn't eat pork. She couldn't eat it, and she loved bacon. So she used to go and get turkey bacon. Something like this would be another option for her. I mean, she's no longer with us, but something like this would have been another option for her, just like you can't eat beef.
Yeah, that's true. Turkey bacon has got to be the worst bacon there ever was invented.
I was there for breakfast one time, and it wasn't my thing. But if, you know, if you can't eat something because of an allergy and it's something that you just love, you do look for alternatives.
I'm just curious, why couldn't she have pork?
I'm not sure. I think it was an allergy. It did something to her every time she had it, but it's something that she loved.
Really?
She used to love.
All right. Well,
yes.
your mother would have loved these things. The next generation of producers are employing innovative ingredients. The San Francisco startup company called Hooray Foods knits together coconut oil, one of my favorite ingredients, coconut oil, rice flour, and tapioca starch through a patent-pending manufacturing process that encapsulates the fat droplets and lets the product cook more like the real thing. I don't see how coconut oil, rice flour, and tapioca is going to taste like bacon, but I guess they add enough seasonings to it. Maybe it will. Prime Roots is another company which started in 2017 and came out of UC Berkeley's Alternative Meat Lab, makes bacon out of koji that's grown in large fermentation tanks. Koji is a fungus, by the way. It's formed into slabs and smoked, then wrapped in colorful packaging. Yeehaw! And then another company called Trophic, T-R-O-P-H-I-C, is also a Berkeley-based alternative protein startup, is rapidly prototyping a bacon made from protein extracted from, here you go, red seaweed. Yum, yum. The highest profile addition is My Neat's Bacon from Albany, New York, which is made from mycelium, the underground root structure of mushrooms. Grown indoors in 100-foot-long raised beds, the mycelium is cut into blocks that are then seasoned with liquid smoke and cut into strips. So there you go. You've got all kinds of options now other than turkey bacon that are made out of coconut oil, rice flour, tapioca. What else did I say? Red seaweed and mushrooms.
Mycelium. So I'm going to have to reach out to some of these people and get some samples and see how it is, because I'm not going to knock it until I try it, you know?
Well, you got to start adding these to your list, because you got to go to Long John Silver's too and get that fake fish and the fake crab meat too.
I do. I've got to find out. I only know one Long John Silver's here, so I'm hoping they have it.
I think they said it was nationwide.
I'm going to have to try that. I'm going to try that first.
All right. What do we got? Let's see. It's okay. We got 3.5 minutes before our next guest calls in. I'll do one more quick story. The San Francisco Bar Owner Alliance is going to require patrons to show proof of vaccination or negative coronavirus test before being allowed to drink inside. The group, which represents more than 500 bars in the city, said that breakthrough cases of the Delta variant have spurred the decision, with vaccinated workers catching the disease. And this is in the Washington Post. What's going on in your area? Are they making you wear a mask again?
It hasn't been dictated yet. No. Most, you know, they've kind of left it up to the individual stores, you know, what they want to do. For instance, we have some places here that mandate do not come in without your mask, period. Some of the smaller places. And then we have larger stores like Costco or, you know, Safeway or Walmart or whatever. They're just like, you know, we trust you. If you say you're vaccinated, we're going to trust that you're vaccinated and you don't have to wear a mask. So they leave it up to the individual owners, basically.
Well, I think it's coming back. I guess they're talking about now everybody having to wear a mask again. Boy, oh boy. Are we ever going to get back to normal? Nope.
I don't know. Because I see conflicting reports on that. I see some, you know, say, hey, this is, you know, like the White House today, I think I saw, has mandated masks inside of the White House. But I don't know. I think so far it's up to individual states. Our state here is, we don't really have a large increase. We're just kind of in a holding pattern, I think. So that's probably why I don't see a difference here, because we're not, you know, we don't have a big increase in COVID cases or variants. So here,
yeah,
so far,
mostly,
we're just.
It's mostly in the South. They're seeing quite a bit of it. And over in California and New York, too. So we shall see.
I don't know. I just had my second vaccine last weekend. Okay. And it was a bugger.
It was a bugger, huh?
It was a bugger. Oh, it was hard. Yeah.
Well, good for you. Because you're planning on going to travel outside the country, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely necessary. Yeah. Some of this cruise line, some of the airlines are mandating that you have to be fully vaccinated. Yeah.
Better you than me. I'm sticking around Maryland. So.
All right.
We're going to take a break and we'll be right back. Hopefully that our second guest will call in.
They will. I've been chatting with them. She was concerned that they might be just a tiny bit late because Marty's coming in from work, but they're ready.
That's not a big deal. A little bit late than not showing up at all. That's a whole different story. All right,
yeah,
everybody.
She said they might be a little bit late.
We'll be right back.
Explore more about our show, the hosts, and, of course, the ideas at BrilliantIdeasRadio.com.
and I walked and I walked and I walked. I stopped to rest my feet. I sat down my old oak tree and I fell fast asleep. I dreamt I was sitting in a cafe as hungry as a bear. My stomach sent a telegram to my head, there's a wreck on the road somewhere. I heard the boys of a pork chop say, come home to me and rest. Talk about your stewing meat, well I know what's the best. Talk about your chicken, ham and eggs, turkey stuffed and dressed. But I heard the boys of a pork chop say, come home to me and rest. I heard the boys of a pork chop say, come home to me and rest. We'll talk about your stewing meat, well I know what's the best. Talk about your chicken, ham and eggs, turkey stuffed and dressed. Heard the boys of a pork chop say, come home to me and rest. And I walked and I walked and I walked. I stopped to rest my feet. I sat down by an old oak tree and I fell fast asleep. I dreamt I was sitting in a cafe as hungry as a bear. My stomach sent a telegram to my head, there's a wreck on the road somewhere. I heard the voice of a pork chop say, come home to me and rest. We'll talk about just doing meat, I know what's the best. Talk about your chicken, ham and eggs, turkey stuffed and dressed. But I heard the voice of a pork chop say, come home to me and rest. Look out now, sure looks good to me.
And now, back to Brilliant Ideas Radio with Frank and Carrie.
And we are back, and this is Frank, and that's Carrie over there, and we are waiting for our our next guest to call in. Do they have the right phone number?
Yes, they do. Yeah, she said that they might be a little bit late.
Okay, I see them. They just popped up on the screen. I was like, oh my gosh, don't tell me there's going to be another one. Okay. We welcome to the show Martin and Ryan Johnson. Hold on, let me make sure they're there before I introduce them. Let's see, system, press the button, and are you guys there?
We are.
All right. This is Marty and Ryan Johnson from Ruby Magdalena Vineyards. And I have one question before I turn it over to Carrie to do the interview. Ruby Magdalena, was that like Jesus's girlfriend, or was that her sister? Was it Mary Magdalena?
actually, that's my mother's name.
Oh, that's why. Well, it's just like I saw that. Wasn't Mary Magdalena, wasn't that in the Bible?
That was the Bible. Mother's full name is Ruben Magdalena Vigili Trujillo Johnson.
Oh, wow. And very interesting. So anyway, welcome to the show. And I'm going to let Carrie do the honors with the interview. I understand you guys are in the wine business and vineyards that et cetera, et cetera. So, Carrie, I'm going to shut up, which is very unusual for me, and turn it over to you.
Oh, thank you, Frank. Hi, Marty and Ryan. It's so good to have you join us. Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie.
So this is Marty and Ryan Johnson, and they are co-owners of Ruby Magdalena Vineyards and winemakers. And Ruby Magdalena is an intimate vineyard in the Rattlesnake Hills, ABA Washington State, Yakima Valley, and that's over on the eastern side, the hot side, the dry side. And they are nestled so sweetly in there among other vineyards and orchards. And it is one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen. And Marty and Ryan, pardon me, are extremely interactive with their clients. both present and then with their future wine drinkers as well. And they also host an Ask a Question Wednesday for the winemakers on their Facebook page. So we definitely want all of you guys to head over there and talk to them and ask some questions, because they are completely open with everything that they are doing. And they're practicing biodiversity, and they give personal tours of the vineyards. So Marty and Ryan, talk to us a little bit.
What would you like to know? It's Ask a Question whatever today is.
It is. So talk to us about your Ask a Winemaker or Ask a Question Wednesday. How has that been working? How many questions are coming in? What kinds of questions are coming in?
We get all kinds of questions, only one or two a week, so we need more questions because I have more knowledge than there are questions, apparently.
Okay, so tell us a bit about your existing vineyard and then what you're doing with the new property next door.
Go ahead.
Well, the existing vineyard we actually planted in 2007. We planted Tempranillo, Graciano, and Garnacha Tinta. We're currently making single varietal wines out of that. And with the new property, we just planted probably 4 or 6 weeks ago, three more rows of Garnacha Tinta and 4 rows of Abrino, which is going to be a white wine for us.
Which is something new. I can't wait to taste that. Oh my gosh. I've been reading a lot about how you've been posting, how you're stewards of the land and you're practicing biodiversity. Could you explain that a little bit, how that works in a vineyard?
Yeah, biodiversity is it's incorporating regenerative agriculture, where we're trying to get the soil back to a natural state with more small, microbes in the soil and mycorrhizal fungi, which will help grow the grapes more efficiently and more naturally without a whole lot of human input. We don't like spraying chemicals in the vineyard. The only thing that we have to control with sprays here is powdery mildew. We figure if it's living there, it's living there for a reason. And the natural predators will eat the insects. We have a small set of falcons on the property that take care of some rodents. We have a nest of vineyard cats that take care of the rest of the rodents. We just believe in diversity here.
And I've been seeing your praying mantises and some snakes that help control all of that as well.
Yes.
Yes. A regular menagerie here.
So, hey guys, how many bottles of wine do you produce on an annualized basis?
Oh, good. I thought you were going to ask how many we drink. We have about an acre and an eighth of property. And off of that acre and an eighth, we usually pull about 5 tons of grapes. We can produce about 300 cases of wine, depending, 250 to 300 cases of wine a year, 12 bottles in a case. So quick math.
$3,600. A lot of bottles of wine for us to drink. And it is the best Tempranillo I've ever had in my life.
Well, I had to ask, because I actually planted 150 vines 4 years ago here in Maryland, and it's been nothing but disaster between beetles and deer and mildew and bad weather, you name it. I have experienced it, and I tip my hat to people who do this for a living. It's so much easier for me just to go to the liquor store and buy a bottle for $8 to $12 than it is to deal with the stuff that I've been dealing with. So I admire your tenacity, because I gave up. Mine now is just like, whatever happens, happens.
Sounds like an East Coast vineyard. You've got a lot of pests that we don't have to worry about. we're in an interesting part of Washington in that we only get about 5 1/4 inches of rain a year at our property.
Wow.
Not the Washington everybody thinks of.
I think I've had a couple of thunderstorms this summer that probably dumped around 4 to 5 inches of rain. It's just
easily.
It's very difficult to grow grapes and on the East Coast, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I still don't. But I do admire people who do it, and you're doing it the all natural way too. So you're not using any. Basically, are you organic?
No, we're not organic, really, because if we need to spray, we will spray. We don't want to be certified. I don't like people telling me how to grow my grapes if they're not here on the property. So we try not to, and we can't afford to really register with the Demeter Society for Biodynamic. We can't register with any of the OMRI for organic. It's very expensive and, to me, very big business, if you will, to go with the natural movement.
So how long have you guys been making wine?
About 15 years here. I've been studying wine and evaluating wine seriously for about 42 years.
Wow. I've been studying it too, but I just study it in my glass. That's how I study it.
Don't study it.
There you go.
So does your wine sell it on the outside, or is this strictly for personal use, or a combination of both?
300 to 350 cases means we'd have to drink about a case a night.
What's wrong with that? You can have a party every night.
That's a little much.
The bad part is getting up for our day job. We just came home from both our day jobs so that we could support this little hobby vineyard of ours, our passion project.
This is a little more than a hobby, though. I mean, you guys sell a lot of wine, and you're getting ready. Now, are you still thinking about creating, utilizing the other property next door for a tasting room and creating a winemaking facility there?
Oh yeah,
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we're available online through our website. We have a fulfillment service that we can ship to 33 states, I believe. We used to sell at 2 retail outlets here in town, but thanks to COVID, those 2 have been shut down temporarily. We're hoping they get back up and running again, and we wish them the best of luck and hope that they invite us back to sell through their retail sales. And of course, you can always order it online and just drive over from Maryland and pick up your wine here at the winery.
Absolutely.
Can you ship to Maryland? Is that one of the states you ship to, is Maryland, or no?
Quick, check the website.
I can check that for you real quick.
If she doesn't accidentally hang up on it.
No, I'm not going to hang up on
okay.
it. But
I was just wondering, because I know it's difficult to sell in some states. I was just wondering, because I buy some spirits online, and a lot of times they won't ship it into Maryland, so it may be one of those states that don't allow it.
Indeed.
Looks like we can ship to Maryland.
There you go. You may have just found a new customer.
Excellent. Hey, come on. I know you have more than one listener, so maybe we found a half dozen new customers.
That's right. Now, this is a Memphis station.
Can you ship to Tennessee?
Yes.
All right. Now, Marty,
yes.
Marty and Ryan get fantastic.
We've already answered them.
Yeah.
So Marty and Ryan get fantastic personal tours of the vineyard. So the links go everywhere. Everyone can listen. So if you are in Washington State, you want to make an appointment. You want to go see Marty and Ryan. Get a tour of the vineyard. And I'll tell you what, these two, they make some mean carnitas. Fire up that grill.
Some of the best
stuff I have ever tasted in my life.
Well, Carrie, we'll definitely do it for you next time you show up.
Oh, thank you. It's been a long time since I've been there. Oh, my gosh. So can you talk to us a little bit I know. So can you talk to us a little bit about what's going on next door and your future plans for the new property?
Sure. We just purchased about 2.5 acres next door to our current property, the adjacent property. We've got a 1935 farmhouse there that we're trying to restore so that we can open a
Airbnb
wellness center, come visit, sit around and drink our wine and enjoy some barbecue or carne asada. Also, we're refurbishing a 2,000-square-foot warehouse shop that was there to house our bigger production facility. A little bit more elbow room in 2,000 square feet than in our garage. And we're going to construct a small tasting room and put picnic tables and outdoor seating so that people can enjoy our weather here, which is phenomenal, if you like 100 degrees.
I see misters in your future.
That's a great idea.
When are you planning the expansion? What's your target date for startup?
As soon as we pick those six little numbers that will make it easy for us.
Taking in the lottery.
We all have that problem.
Exactly. There's a saying in the wine industry that you make $1 million in the wine with a winery by starting with $10 million.
And we only started
with about $500,000. So we're kind of looking at about another $200,000 worth of renovation. So we're hoping to have it done and financed in the next year, maybe 2 years.
It's so exciting.
You may not have listened to any other shows, but I will comment that my favorite wines are from Washington State. I've always been a Washington State wine drinker, and just curious, in the Yakima area where you're located, how many different wineries are in your vicinity?
Oh my God.
Just one important one. There are over 1,000 wineries in the state of Washington now. In the Yakima Valley, I would estimate about 80 to 100.
Really?
In our Zilla area in the Rattlesnake Hills, there are now 30-ish. This has been kind of a up and down year and a half, as you know. So the numbers are pretty fluid right now.
Carrie and I talked about it last week, and as you know, they're having major problems in Napa Valley between the drought and the fires and all the things that have been going on there and COVID. And Carrie and I were talking about that Washington State could become like quote unquote new Napa because climate change and all that's going on, and it's getting, you know, the climate is changing up there. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of those California folks may pack their bags and head north. Because it's been a mess in the valley.
They're already doing it. There are a lot of properties being bought up by California companies, by California individuals. I think they realize that California is going to slip into the ocean. It's just a matter of time. You know, we're saying our prayers here, knock on wood. But, we're poised in second place right now. We're the second largest producing wine state in the U.S. We're about one-tenth the size of California, but we're trying. What was the old Avis ad? We're number two, but we try harder.
There you go. Because what was it? We talked about it, Carrie, last week, that Napa Valley, the average cost per acre in wine country was $1 million an acre.
Let's go down there, find an acre, sell it, not own it, of course, and use the money to finance our winery.
Well, there you go. That's what I was thinking. You know, you said you needed to pick the six numbers. If you can get the real estate prices in Yakima County to be $1 million per acre, then you're all set.
If we could get a flatbed and move our winery down there. There. And then move back once we sell it. No, wait.
No, that doesn't work.
Property up here, we paid in 2004, we paid about $42,000 for a little over 2 acres.
Wow. Well, I hope the real estate prices go up and up and up in your area, because, like I said, California folks in Northern California are having a hard time. Now, what did you say your website address was? I didn't catch it.
I didn't say it. That's because we're best. It is rubymagdalenavineyards.com.
And everyone will be able to find it on Saturday morning when everybody's watching, or when everybody's listening, they can pop over to basilandsalt.com and find a direct link to your website, and also a direct link to finefoods.com. And Frank, I know you'll have a link on Brilliant Radio.
We will definitely have a link up there, and maybe you can get some new customers in Tennessee, and you've got a potential one right here in Maryland. So hopefully this radio interview will help you out. And one other question was, what type of grapes did you say you grow there for the most part?
We are all Spanish varieties. We grow Tempranillo, Graciano, and Garnacha Tinta right now.
What is that last one? I've never even heard of that. What is that?
Oh, I'm sure you have. It's actually Grenache Noir. But it originated in Spain. The French took it and named it, and everybody likes the French, so that's the name that they use.
Everybody likes the French.
Was that a blanket statement there saying everybody loves the French, or at least the wine world?
That was the PC way.
All you gotta do to find us is Google Ruby Mag, and we'll pop up on that first page, God willing.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have a Facebook page too, that people can find you.
Absolutely, Ruby Magdalena Vineyards. It's everywhere you want to be.
All right.
I see that you're looking now. You're also looking for people. You're planning for harvest.
Absolutely. Okay. Many hands make light work, so we take help in any way, shape, or form, any time of the year.
Okay, good to know.
All I ever think about, Carrie, is when people talk about that, I think of that Lucy episode when she's crushing grapes, walking around in the crushing grapes.
That's
you. All right. Well, we're going to have to take a break. We appreciate you coming on the show. Everybody, check out the website. Go to basilandsalt.com and also greenideasradio.com. And Saturday, you should be able to click a link there to take you directly to their website to check out their wine out there in Yakima, Washington. And guys, keep us posted on how things go out there, especially when you get your new expansion going. And after you hit those 6 numbers in the lottery, let us know how things are going.
You'll be the first to know.
Great. All right, we're taking a break, and we will be back in a few more minutes for more food news. Everybody hang tight.
Thank you so much.
Frank and Carrie will be back in a moment with more Brilliant Ideas.
So she eats everything she sees. I'm not worried about her feeling right, as long as she leaves something for me. She likes spicy, she likes sweet, All she do is eat, eat, eat. She makes any old lucky dog feel like a girl's best friend. She eats off the low part of the hog, right on up to the high end. She likes greens, she likes meat. All she do is eat, eat, eat. She's not exactly overweight, but neither is she underfed. You wanna make the girl feel good, give her a double helping of a hot bread pudding. Give the girl some good seafood if you wanna make her feel real nice. A bowl of gumbo puts her in the mood if you will follow it with shrimp and rice. A toupee with crawfish meat, all she do is eat, eat, eat. Hot bread pudding. Give the girl some good sweet food if you want to make her feel real nice. A bowl of gumbo puts her in the mood if you follow it with shrimp and rice. Ate to pray with crawfish meat. All she do is eat, eat, eat. Drinks her coffee extra sweet. All she do is eat, eat, eat.
And now, back to Brilliant Ideas Radio with Frank and Carrie.
We are back. I love talking to people like that, Carrie.
They are some of the best people in the entire world, I'm telling you right now.
Salt of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Entrepreneur spirit at its finest. So how long have they actually, they said they've been, I guess, in the winemaking business for like 15 years. How long have they had this actual property that they're growing the grapes on and making the wine? Is it 15 years?
They started there, and that's where they are at. He's now, he has a day job, she has a day job, and they do this then in their spare time, which is like you and I would, well, I don't know what it's like to have spare time either, but you know, we would, have your job, go home. No, they have their job, and then they get home, they eat something really fast, and they get back to work. And sometimes they don't get done working until, 11 o'clock at night.
No, they seem like very, very nice people, and they've got high hopes and dreams to build their business. So if you can, check out their product. It always helps to buy from the little guy, because the little guy one day may be a big guy. No, they're very pleasant. I can't pronounce their website, but if you go to basilandsalt.com or the radio, brilliantideasradio.com, you'll be able to have the link that goes to their site on Saturday.
Uh-huh.
I think they said they can sell right through their website, correct?
Yeah, yes, they do. I actually helped them with their website. There's a link that goes straight to their store.
Okay.
And you can purchase through VinoShipper.com.
And I will assume, being the wine connoisseur woman that you are, you've had their wines, right?
Yes, the Tempranillo is the best I've ever had.
There you go. Carrie says buy it.
Yep, Tempranillo is fantastic. Absolutely.
All right. Now let's go back to food news. I have a few more stories, and then we're going to also talk about basilandsalt.com to give you a heads up to whatever you want to talk about, what's going on in your business. But a couple of other food news stories for this week. I found this to be very interesting. 84% of consumers globally order chicken from a restaurant or dining establishment at least once a month. I would have thought it'd be more than that, wouldn't you? Once a month?
It's
I would have thought 84? People buy more than once a month. Yeah. 39% prefer their chicken grilled versus fried or roasted.
I don't know. I mean, if somebody has a good filet or some great seafood, I would order that before chicken. Absolutely.
I'm trying to think. Do I order chicken out? Not really, except Popeyes. I like Popeyes chicken. But yeah, you're right. I think I should probably order more seafood. But now after reading that crazy story in the beginning of the show, I don't even know if I'm going to order seafood anymore.
Well, how do you know your chicken is chicken? How do you know it's not rabbit? How do you know it's not frog?
That is a very good point. How do you know your chicken is chicken? How do you know your beef is beef? How do you know your Wagyu is Wagyu? How do you know?
You don't know. You don't know today. You just got to trust it.
Scary. All right, you're not going to like the next story, Carrie. This is not going to be one of your favorite ones. But we've talked about the last several weeks about the benefits of coffee. Well, of course, there's going to be the reverse side of that story. And a new study has just come out, and excess coffee use has shown to decrease brain volume and increase dementia risks. Now, it didn't say excess coffee. Like, what's considered excess coffee? Like, you know, three pots a day? I don't know. But it says...
It does. It says down here that more than 6 cups of coffee a day had a 53% increased risk.
Yikes.
53%.
That's not good, because I drink a whole pot a day. How many cups of coffee in a pot?
It depends on how big your cup is.
that's like wine. That's a good question. Why do they make wine glasses so big? Because
I mean, my coffee
glass,
maker says it's a 4-cup pot, you know, but it's 2.
I think mine says 12 cups. Yeah, it does.
Wow.
It says 12 cups.
Yeah. Wow. And you drink a whole one a day.
Well, I am really doomed to it, because I didn't read that part. 6 cups of coffee. I'm doomed. It says here that coffee may perk us up, but new research from the University of South Australia, what are the Australians doing? They don't know. Shows that too much could be dragging us down, especially when it comes to brain health. In the largest study of its kind, yikes, researchers have found that high coffee consumption is associated with smaller total brain volumes and an increased risk of dementia. Well, I'm kind of a small brain guy to begin with. Conducted at the UniSA Australian Center for Precision Health and a team of international researchers, the study assessed the effects of coffee on the brain. 17,702 participants aged 37 to 73, finding that those who drank more than, there's that 6 cups of coffee a day, had a 53% increased risk of dementia. I'm in trouble.
Now, are they only testing the older people for dementia? I mean, 37 is a little bit young to be tested for dementia. I mean, I've had more than 6 cups of coffee a day, and I'm 54. And at 37, I was still drinking 6-plus coffee, you know, cups of coffee a day. So I don't think anybody could have tested me at 37 and said, hey, you, you know.
Good point. Very good point. I mean, most people don't get dementia until they're probably in their 70s or 80s, right?
Well, some of them can start earlier, sure, but, you know, can start having signs. But I think that we tested at 37, ages 37 to 73, and, you know, for dementia, or, I mean, I don't know how. I don't know. They assess the effects of coffee on the brain.
Yeah. I agree. We need to argue these findings on this particular research. It says coffee is among the most popular drinks in the world. Yet, with global consumption being more than 9 billion kilograms a year, it's critical that we understand any potential health implications. This is the most extensive investigation into the connections between coffee, brain volume measurements, the risk of dementia, and the risk of stroke. Oh, they threw stroke in here now, too. It's also the largest study to consider volumetric brain imaging data and a wide range of confounding factors. Well, whoop-dee-doo. Accounting for all possible permutations, we consistently found that higher coffee consumption was significantly associated with reduced brain volume, essentially drinking more than 6 cups of coffee a day, maybe putting you at risk of brain diseases such as dementia and stroke. What were you getting ready to say?
How many studies have come out that coffee, you know, helps hold off this type of cancer or helps hold off this or this or that? I mean, it's kind of an offset. How many years have people been drinking coffee? I know a lot of people that have been drinking coffee forever that, you know, pretty ripe old age and have not had dementia or stroke. So I think it's, I don't know.
Well, you're right. I mean, for the most part, honestly, I mean, for the most part, most people, I would say a majority of people, I don't know the exact percentage, but I would say majority of people drink coffee. I would also say that a lot of people drink a lot of coffee. So is this result based on just the coffee or is it some other factors?
Right, right.
Are they just blaming it on the coffee just because they were paid by somebody to blame it on the coffee?
Well, maybe because there's going to be a coffee shortage. They need less people to buy coffee. So they want you to think that it's going to give you dementia and a stroke.
Speaking of that, by the way, prices on the open market and the futures market went up last week 10 to 12% on coffee futures. So remember we talked about that. Price of coffee is going up.
Well, it seems to me that all the studies that they've done promote, you know, that talk about coffee. Coffee has so many more health benefits than not. I mean, I'm not going to give it coffee. I'm not going to have dementia or a stroke because of coffee. If I end up with dementia or a stroke, it's going to be because I'm old, and probably because I've eaten too much bacon.
There you go.
Not coffee. There's probably 8 million other things out there that will give me a stroke before coffee will.
Well, as I said to somebody on Facebook this past week, living causes death. We're going to die
That's
something.
Right.
So I'm not sure if it's coffee. It may be all that fake fish we're eating. Who knows?
Maybe. I mean, everything, if you do it in excess, is bad for you. So there we are.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll take that on advisement, but I'm still going to drink coffee.
Yep.
if I start fading here on the radio and start having issues with my brain powers, which some people probably say I already do, but you can blame it on the coffee. Okay.
God, Frank, how much coffee have you been drinking today? You have no brain power.
Honestly, I mean, some of these studies we read every week, if you really listen to everything that we said, everything can cause something. I mean,
yeah,
you're never going. There's not a perfect food. There's nothing that's going to be everything in moderation. Excess of anything can kill you. So, whatever.
That's right.
Maybe we should stop this. Maybe we should stop this reading all these studies. That's what we should do. Reading studies
okay.
will cause. Reading studies about things that will kill you will cause anxiety. There's my study.
That's right. It will cause severe anxiety.
That's right. Okay. Let's see here. Customer traffic at casual dining chains is almost back to pre-pandemic levels. That was as of last week, but now we've got the new Delta variant. But according to a new study by the research firm Placer, PLACER, traffic at casual dining restaurants pulled within 3.8% of the 2019 levels in June and will likely shoot past pre-pandemic benchmarks by the end of the summer before the restaurant business. So that's good news. Everybody's going back out there and visiting the restaurants, and we're back to almost 2019 levels. So now we're going to have more shutdowns, but that's good news right now.
Are we going to have more shutdowns? I haven't heard that.
I predict it. I've got a bet, by the way, with a couple of my friends. I bet them 4 weeks ago that we're going to be going back to shutdowns, and they told me I was crazy. So I've got two Amazon gift cards bet right now, $25 gift cards with my friends, because they said I was crazy 4 weeks ago. Now they're getting a little nervous.
Are they? I don't think so. I don't. I mean, I think that, first of all, the American public, you know, we went through that for months. And it's not something that, you know, that we want to do again. Of course, we want to follow the rules. We want to be compliant. But I just don't think that they would do something that severe again. I just don't.
Well, I've got $50 worth of Amazon gift cards hanging in the balance right now.
You want to hear some food news? Something that's probably going to make you happy? Okay.
What?
Wild Alaska pollock is among the most climate-friendly proteins in the world. So life cycle assessment reveals wild Alaska pollock has a significantly lower carbon footprint than many other protein choices, including beef, chicken, and plant-based options.
Better than plant-based options?
Yes. So with all of the news out there that plant-based options are the only way to go to reduce the carbon footprint, Wild Alaska pollock has a significantly lower carbon footprint. I mean, by a lot. So plant-based meats, and I don't really know how everything, you know, what they call the measurements here, but plant-based meats are 20.83, where wild Alaska pollock is 3.77. As a matter of fact, if we're going there, plant-based meats is higher than pork and chicken as well.
See, there you go. Yeah, that's
I'm
that carbon footprint. That's that carbon footprint thing. And I've been talking about that too with people, because it.
Right.
I mean, when you make this stuff in a plant, there's a carbon footprint associated with pollock. I'm trying to think, pollock. Who sells pollock? What's that frozen fish company that sells pollock?
You can go over to Basil. You can go over to basilandsalt.com and read it.
You can do what?
You can go over to basilandsalt.com and read it.
Oh, well, yeah, but who sells pollock? I don't even know if I've even seen that here on the East Coast.
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
What is that frozen fish company that has the guy in the yellow raincoat?
Oh, that's Gordon Fisherman.
Yeah, I think Gordon sells pollock. If I'm not mistaken, I saw that at Walmart. I think they sell pollock fillets. There you go.
There you go. So it doesn't tell me here who sells pollock, although you can go to alaskapollock.org and probably find out who it is that sells it. But, you know,
like,
find a...
Like Carrie.
What?
If you buy it, how do you know it's really pollock?
I guess you don't. But unless it has the Alaska Genuine Pollock stamp right on it.
All right, I got one other story that I dug up a minute ago before we go to the end of the show. Now, we talked about coffee not being good for you, for your brain and dementia. Well, guess what? Drinking a little bit of alcohol each week protects your heart if you have cardiovascular condition, a study found. If you're living with heart disease, having a small amount of alcohol each day is linked to a lower risk of having another heart attack, stroke, angina, or any early death, according to a new large study. This is not the general population. The study applies to people who have already had something happen that relates to cardiovascular health, said alcohol researcher so-and-so, who is a senior director of organizational development and training at the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation of the University of Washington. Boy, he's got a business card that's long. And what they find is that if you continue to drink after you've had a cardiac event, this is interesting, it's not that bad for you, as long as you keep consumption low, of course. When compared with people who do not drink at all, the study found drinking up to 105 grams of alcohol each week, 105 grams. I hate when they do this whole, what do you call that? Not Dewey Decimal. What do they call that? 105 grams. I don't know what that is. The metric system, the equivalent of just over a bottle of wine or a six pack of medium strength beer a week. A bottle of wine a week appeared to protect people who had already suffered a heart problem from having another occurrence or any early death. Our findings suggest that people with cardiovascular disease may not need to stop drinking in order to prevent additional heart attacks, strokes, or angina, but that they may wish to consider lowering their weekly alcohol intake. This was the largest alcohol cardiovascular study to date. Researchers are calling this study to date to examine the risk of alcohol use in people with existing cardiovascular disease. Data was collected from over 14,000 people who had already had heart attacks, strokes, or angina, and who were followed up 20 years later. Yada, yada, yada. So, there you go.
Yada, yada, yada.
There's a whole bunch of other technical stuff here, but I don't want to read it. But basically, if you drink, if you've had a heart attack and you drink, it's actually not bad for you. Well, I haven't had a heart attack, so doesn't that mean it's good for me too?
Probably. How much are you drinking? Are you drinking a bottle a week?
Seven times a week.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I don't have that many. That's a lie. More like eight. No, probably three or four bottles. I think I probably drink three or four bottles a week. How much do you drink?
I'm probably like a half to three quarters of a bottle a week, maybe. Sometimes not at all.
Drink a three quarters of a bottle of wine a week.
That's not every week. No, I don't do that anymore. No, I started having problems with my pancreas, so I cut that down to hardly anything. Yeah, like I'll make a cocktail and I'll taste it. I'll sample something, but yeah, for my own health and safety, goodness gracious, I have to be careful.
Wow. Just call me Otis of Mayberry then, I guess.
And you know what I found, though, because see, my mom passed from pancreatic cancer as well. So I have found that I went dry for about 14 or 15 months. And following that, when I started tasting and making cocktails and things again and sampling wines for basal salt, I found that I have developed so much. Everything has a deeper flavor than it had before. There's so many more nuances and layers. It's quite enjoyable, actually, to taste it and not just drink it as it happened in the past, if that makes sense.
No, it makes total sense. Maybe that's why I don't have the hints the hint and the nuances because I need to take a break and enjoy it more. But I thought mine was like standard three or four bottles a week, and you're talking 3/4 of a bottle a week. Good Lord,
well, mine is way below standard though, and that's on purpose. That's why, you know, don't keel over.
How do you make it last for that long? Because once you open it,
there's no such thing as leftover wine, right? No, there's vacuum pumps that you can use that suck all the air out of it and reseal it.
Okay. Well, mine, I don't have to ever worry about those pumps and those kind of things.
Sometimes I open them up and I give them away after I taste them, and then I give them, you know, to a neighbor or something. Hey, you know, I opened this up. I'm not going to be drinking it. I mean, sometimes when I have tastings, you know, there's 4 to 6 bottles at a time. So obviously I'm going to taste them and then hand them off.
I got a problem. Maybe I need to say
no, you don't. I mean, I used to drink that much. I used to easily probably put 4 bottles a week away.
Well, maybe all my wine will offset all the coffee, and it just, like, it's a balance. The coffee is shrinking my brain.
That could be the perfect cocktail right there.
Yeah, it's right. The coffee's shrinking the brain, but the wine is helping the heart. So I'll probably live a long time, but I won't remember anything. But oh well. Okay, what did you want to talk about? What's going on at basilandsalt.com? Anything exciting?
Basilandsalt.com. We are having so much fun over here. We're doing podcasts. We are now on Google Cast and Spotify, and there's a whole slew of other channels they gave me, and I don't even know what they are, so I'm going to have to list them here on the site. But also, the gourmet shop is open. And if you've been listening to our show, you've heard from the black garlic market, and you're going to be able to find their mustards right here on basilandsalt.com, and even some of Finey's dust. I have some gorgeous, gorgeous wine bottle candles with a cork stopper. Seriously, Frank, you need to go on here and get one. I have one.
I'm rushing there right now to get a candle.
We have some artisans of salt. We have some French salts and peppers. It's absolutely gorgeous. Come see us. Come shop with us.
There you go. So that's pretty cool. So you've got your own little like retail shop thing going on there. I didn't know that. I have to check that
that's
out.
That's right. I have balsamics and balsamics from Italy and London. We have salts from France. The candles are from London. We've got these wonderful little snacks. So there's maple syrup chocolate pecans and these smoked chili almonds with these little personalized snacks. It's great. You should really come check us out.
I will definitely check it out. By the way, too, if you would like to hear any of our past shows, you can go to grillandideasradio.com, hit the tab that says replays, and you can hear past shows, information about what happened back then, and if you want to get in contact with us. By the way, I had people contact me last week. It was interesting. So people are actually listening, believe it or not. But if you want to contact us, there's a contact tab on grillandideasradio.com. If you know of anybody who wants to be on the show in the food business or in the music business, contact us and we'll set up to see if we can have them on the show and see what else do I need to say. That's pretty much it. Tell Adam Feinberg thanks for joining us.
And I'll let him know how great the interview went.
Yeah, the interview was fantastic. So check out his website. Also, check out the winery folks. They seem like great people. Check out their website. Go to basilandsalt.com to get the links for that. And I think that's everything I have covered. And so I will let you sign off, Gary.
Oh, well, as usual, thank you for listening. We hope you come back next week because we love talking to you.
We will see you then.
Thanks for listening to Brilliant Ideas Radio with Frank and Carrie. Opinions, comments, and representations made by the hosts and guests of this program are not necessarily shared by this station and are purely for entertainment purposes. Explore more about our show, the hosts, and, of course, the ideas at brilliantideasradio.com.
Find a good place to eat, get some barbecue.